You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Good Sunday to you, and welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. Our show today has been sponsored by Hearst Ranch. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with an extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as is the surrounding landscape. For more information, visit them on the web at www.hearstranch.com. And I owe another debt of gratitude to Hearst Ranch for Brian Kenny, the fabulous performer who sings the intro song to Cutting the Curd. He is also a Hearst Ranch guy. So thanks, Brian. So on Cutting the Curd today, I am very pleased to have with me my good friend Martin Johnson, who is the founder of The Joy of Cheese, which is a really wonderful series of informal cheese tastings in New York. For the episode today, we're going to chat with Martin, and then later on we're going to be chatting with Leslie Cooper Band of Prairie Fruits Farm, which is Illinois' first farmstead cheese producer. And I just thought it was appropriate, since Martin and I are both from Illinois, that we would join forces for the state of cheese in Illinois. So, Martin, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
How did you get started with The Joy of Cheese? Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what you do?
Oh, sure. The short of it is this. I'm a freelance journalist, and there have rarely been moments in recent history where that was a particularly secure way to make ends meet. So I've often had sidelights in the food business, and I go in, I go out, and when I came back to the business in 2003, frankly, I was astonished by the caliber of cheese that was available to New Yorkers, and I was also appalled by the lack of information channels. I feel like you could learn a good bit about wine or beer by just going to good retailers and paying attention to what's being handed out for free, whereas there was nothing of that ilk for cheese of the caliber that you and I like to deal with. So I was trying to think of a way to expand those information channels, and a friend of mine suggested going to people's homes and holding cheese tastings. Well, that sounded like a lot of fun, because I would get to see apartments that were far better than the ones I have I live in, and it proved to be a really good way to introduce people to the caliber of the variety and caliber of handcrafted cheese, and help them connect the dots between what they like and why they like it.
And so now it's interesting. You started in people's homes, but I know that you also do tastings in quite a few great bars around the city. Who are some of your partners in that area where people could find Joy of Cheese events?
The three monthly clients that I have are DBA Brooklyn, which is here in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and right off the first stop of the L train and after Manhattan. And I do a tasting almost the first Tuesday of every, it's almost always the first Tuesday of every month, and we pair cheeses with beer there. We do seven cheeses and seven beers. I talk about the cheeses. The owner, Ray Dieter, talks about beers. In fact, Ray Dieter is the host of Beer Sessions here on Heritage Radio Network.
It's a small world.
And then I work with two places on Clinton Street that are a block apart, and I certainly didn't intend that, but both places have been wonderful at developing their own independent constituencies. One is called Clerkenwell, and it's on the Lower East Side on Clinton Street between Stanton and Rivington, and the other is called Culture Fix, and it's just south of Houston Street.
Fantastic. Well, you know, it's really a wonderful thing to be able to have access to an event like that, where people can come and learn a great deal about cheese, drink some delicious beer or wine, depending on the venue, and not have it be, you know, $1 million, and have it just be a fun, interactive experience.
Oh. That's exactly it. The events are rarely more than $25, and I do that because I don't see the point in charging people $85 to bask in your presence and taste some good cheese. I mean, there are outfits that do that, and my bank account and my landlord envies them. But on the whole, if you're not making this caliber of product accessible to people, then they're never going to get interested in it.
Absolutely, amen. That's what I think about my shop too. It's like, just give people a taste, make it fun, and create some new cheese lovers. We're actually going to take a really quick break, and when we come back from the break, we are going to be patched in to Leslie from Prairie Foods Farm. So stay with us.
And it's good sometime to make real the world of fantasy and make believe, as some people do. Some people like hobos, for instance, sometimes. One sunny day in the month of May, a burly bum came hiking down the shady lane by the sugar cane, a-looking for his liking. As he strolled along, he sang a song of the land of milk and honey, where a bum can stay for many a day, and he don't need any money. Oh, the buzzing of the bees in the cigarette trees, the soda water fountain, the lemonade springs where the bluebird sings on the big rock candy mountain.
We are back on Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and my guests today are Martin Johnson, founder of The Joy of Cheese, which is a series of cheese tastings here in New York City. And we are also being joined by Leslie Cooper Band of Prairie Fruits Farm, and we're talking about the state of cheese in Illinois. Leslie, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hello. Thank you so much for being on the show.
You're welcome.
The three of us have in common is that we are all at some point from Illinois. Myself from Libertyville, which is a small town north of Chicago. Martin, where are you from originally?
Originally, I'm from the south side of Chicago. I was born, my parents lived in Lake Meadows when I was born, and I grew up in Hyde Park, Kenwood.
Cool. And Leslie, Prairie Fruits is located down in Champaign-Urbana, right?
That's correct, yes.
Cool. So three Illinoisians. we're really excited to talk with you today because, being Illinois' first farmstead cheese producer, we're just really interested to hear how you got started and what's going on in the world of cheese in Illinois. So could you tell us a little bit about your farm and how you guys got started making cheese?
Sure. My husband, Wes Jarrell, and I moved here in 2003 from Madison, Wisconsin, actually. Cheese making is a second career for me. Prior to becoming a cheesemaker, I was a professor of soil science at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and my husband, Wes, was offered a job here at the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana, so We moved here and fortuitously found our farm, which was actually a farmhouse with 7 acres that was carved off of a 40-acre corn and soybean farm. And we decided at that point that we wanted to have a small, diversified farm with fruit trees, and the idea of goats and starting a dairy kind of came secondary to that, but actually it's become the main thing of what we do. So we got a few goats in 2004, three does and one buck specifically. And I did not grow up on a farm, and actually I had a very urban upbringing. And so we started small and simple, and which was a really good thing because we didn't, well, my husband had goats when he was growing up, but not in a full-fledged dairy setting that we were anticipating. So it was good that we started with just a few, and then we decided to go commercial, and in 2005 we built our creamery and our dairy and got licensed as the first farmstead creamery in the state of Illinois.
Wow, that's incredible. So, well, from the very get-go, I feel like, you know, your background as a soil science, you know, professor probably informs so much of what you guys do. I mean, I just find it really fascinating that, you know, in the middle of a landscape, you said, you know, dominated mostly by corn and soybeans, that, you know, you have a sort of a completely different outlook with your farm. How do you feel like that background sort of influences, you know, the way that you guys do what you do?
Well, it actually has been really beneficial to have the science background, but in particular, I think soil science, because it has chemistry and biology and a little bit of everything, is a really good foundation for cheese making, because there's so many of the same concepts when you're dealing with a microbially mediated process like cheese making. It's very helpful. And as far as the what we do and why we decided to do it, we have worked with farmers in the past in an academic setting, and for me particularly, I really wanted the opportunity to have a go at it myself, to convince myself that I could actually do the things that I had been telling other people to do for years, and having a lot of diversity, having mixed livestock as well as crops, and restoring the soil fertility, and because our farm, even though it's on prairie soils, was pretty beaten up when we got it. So we spent a lot of time improving the soil fertility.
Now, since we're, you know, in the State of Cheese series that I've been doing, you know, of course, focusing on dairy, you know, and cheese in different states, but can you tell us a little bit about the agricultural history of Illinois and what's happened, you know, because, yeah, what was it, 150 years ago, the soils there were probably the best in the entire world. Would you be comfortable or willing to comment on that?
Sure. I mean, this part of the state of Illinois, central Illinois in particular, and Champaign County specifically, is dominated by what are called prairie soils, and they were created after the glaciers moved off the landscape, and then all this beautiful wind-blown silty material deposited on top, and then these prairie grasses started to grow and created this really rich, very fertile, but also very wet soil. And the Native Americans that lived in this area actually navigated through this area for a good part of the year with canoes, we were told, because it was really a very wet prairie. And when the Europeans came and saw the vastness of the prairie, they realized that they really couldn't cultivate it until they dealt with the excess water. So they tile drained most of this area, and if it wasn't for them draining it, they really wouldn't have been able to convert it into the grain intensive production that it is today. But they were basically taking advantage of the very high organic matter in the soils when they drained it and then started to till it and grow crops on it.
Wow, that's really, really fascinating. I'm kind of becoming more, the deeper I get into my exploration of, you know, cheese stuff, I feel like I'm just becoming a history geek. It's so fascinating to hear how all this kind of comes to pass.
Yeah, and it is interesting what kinds of crops people decided to grow here based on the soils. Because, you know, Wisconsin, which isn't geographically very far from here, but the landscape and the soils are so different that seem to lend itself more to dairying, and northern Illinois the same thing, but here in central Illinois it was more suitable, or so they felt, for grain. But but we actually think that this land, you can grow anything on this soil. It's just so incredibly fertile.
And so what's the process been like for you guys to rehabilitate your soils?
Well, our first year we didn't do anything except plant a cover crop. We put all of our acreage into buckwheat for the first year so that we could begin to restore the soil. And then the following year is when we started planting our fruit trees, planting some pasture and just basically putting it all into permanent vegetation, perennial crops. And over time, we've acquired more land, not through ownership, but through rental of adjacent pieces of property, and we've converted all of that from cash grain to pasture and to hay field. So we're now and we're managing it all organically. I should mention all of our land is well, our fruit is certified organic, but our pastures and our hay is managed organically. So it's been a 5-6 year process of taking what was a very simple cropping rotation of corn and soybeans to permanent vegetation and very diverse vegetation.
Wow, that is really, really awesome. We've kind of reached the midpoint of the show. I think now would be a good time to take a really quick break. But when we come back, we'll talk more about your farm and the kinds of cheeses you make and the fruit and the whole nine yards. So stick with us.
All right.
My daddy is an engineer, my brother drives a hack, my sister takes in washing, and the baby balls a jack. And it looks like I'm never gonna cease my wandering. I've been wandering early and late, New York City to the Golden Gate, and it looks like I'm never gonna see my wife.
All right, we're back on Cutting the Curd. Our show today has been sponsored by Hearst Ranch, and we are talking the state of cheese in Illinois with Martin Johnson and Leslie Cooper Band. And I was Martin's gonna lead off with some questions about the farm.
Yeah, Leslie, I wanted to know, how did you choose the cheeses that you're making, and or how did you choose to make those ones your commercial focus?
Well, we make everything from fresh chev or fresh goat cheese to several styles of semi-hard and even some hard raw milk cheeses, and most of the decision was based on what I like to eat, because I figured, well, if I like it, then I can sell it better to people. And so we started out with chev our first year. That's basically all we made, and our first year was kind of a shortened year because it took us a while to build our facility and actually become commercial and be able to sell. And then we added Blumy Rind cheeses. And the decision there was partly because of that those cheeses are ones that I like, but also I think that goat milk really lends itself really well to Blumy Rind cheeses, and so many of the French cheeses made with goat milk are in the Blumy Rind family, and so we tackled those and added those to our repertoire, and then started playing around with some tome-like cheeses are kind of hybrid wash rind tome cheese. That's our Moon Glow, and that's a raw milk cheese. And then by our fourth year, we actually helped an Amish family pretty close to here who was interested in having dairy sheep. We helped them get licensed as the first sheep dairy in the state of Illinois with the intent of buying their milk so that we would make cheese from their sheep milk. So we added sheep milk cheeses to our repertoire. This will now be our third year doing that. And with those cheeses, we've just kind of been playing around with different styles, from soft ripen to some hard cheeses like Pecorino style and things like that.
And how do you, how widely are your cheeses sold, and what issues have you faced in getting them to the marketplace?
I would say that 98 to 99% of our cheese is sold locally, and by locally I include Chicago as a market. Chicago is a really important market for us. We do presently about half of our sales are direct to consumers through farmers markets, and then the rest is either direct sales to restaurants and shops, or through a distributor, a couple of distributors that we have in Chicago. And then we do a little bit of out-of-state sales, but mostly just by request, people contacting us through email and asking mm-hmm. if they could buy our cheese.
I was talking to C. on Scanlon over at Andante Dairy a couple of weeks ago, and she spoke a lot about how sometimes she works with restaurants to create cheeses that are unique to that particular restaurant, so their cheese plate can have something that nobody else has. Have you pursued anything of that ilk?
Actually, we'd been approached by Stephanie Izzard of Girl and the Goat restaurant in Chicago to do something like that. And we did a little bit of experimenting last year, and we may pursue something like that this year. But it seems like there's so much demand for the cheeses that we have in our repertoire for them to have on their cheese plate, and that they, especially in Chicago, given that there are so few Illinois cheesemakers and in particular artisan cheesemakers in Illinois, that they're really happy to have Illinois represented on their cheese plate.
Mm. Oh, well, I was going to ask too, just about you know, as far as Champaign-Urbana goes, of course it's a, you know, it's a town with a big with a huge ag school. Have your sort of efforts been noticed by them and you know, your community as well as the university, and have they, I don't know, have they influenced you know, your fellow farmers in any sort of really noticeable ways?
That's a great question. I mean, it is a very big ag school, and historically it's been a really important player in shaping the face of agriculture in the state of Illinois. But sadly, there isn't much of a focus on dairy science, and in fact there is no one in the food science department, for example, that actually specializes in dairy foods. And in the animal science arena, there's only one person on their faculty that actually deals with dairy and goat. You know, within the realm of dairy, goat dairies is not really given a whole lot of consideration. But on the other hand, so many of our customers at the farmers market are university folks and the people that are well-traveled and familiar with cheeses from Europe and other parts of the U.S., they're some of our best customers, and a lot of them happen to be affiliated with the university. So it in terms of advice and input, there's not a whole lot coming from the university, although I will say that our vet school, we've established a really great relationship with our vet school, and we've had a lot of the vet students out here for on hands-on opportunities working with our animals. So that's been a really good thing. But other than that, there hasn't been a whole lot of two-way communication.
Interesting. Well, and I find it so interesting, too. So then on the one side, you have the university community, and then on the other side, you said you have the Amish community, which is another, you know, gap that can be difficult to bridge. How did you guys forge that partnership? And are there, you know, neighbors or other members of that community that are interested in doing this kind of value-added dairy?
Yeah, it's a really interesting community. It's about 45 miles south of here, so it's pretty close. And what was most interesting is that it is a community that historically has had a number of dairies, all cow dairies, and they're kind of one of the remaining holdouts for dairy community in central Illinois. There's kind of a few little pockets of remaining dairy farm communities in this area, and they're one of them. And this particular family, or it's actually two families, had approached us after they had heard about the possibility of milking goats and sheep. They had actually had a visitor from Chicago who had come down to talk to them, and we had attended this meeting. And a lot of them had no idea that you could actually milk sheep. They'd never even heard about that. And after, shortly after that meeting, these two gentlemen, brothers-in-law, had contacted us and said, you know, we're thinking about this. If we did this, would you guys buy our milk? And we told them, well, we would consider it. Here are the standards that we would like you to adhere to in terms of animal husbandry and cleanliness and things like that. And we basically just worked with them, helped them maneuver through the state regulations for getting permitted as a dairy, and it's an evolving relationship. They've been up here a couple of times. They've brought their whole families up here to see what we do. We of course we go down there to pick up the milk because they can't drive.
That'll be a long journey by buggy.
Yeah. Yeah, the milk would be worthless by the time they got here.
It would be sheep butter, cultured sheep butter.
Yeah, exactly. So we go down there twice a week, usually to pick up the milk, and it's been really interesting. And they're very open and willing to. And they did a lot of research on their own in terms of the breeds and the breeding stock, and they went up to Wisconsin to Hidden Springs Creamery. Brenda Jensen, I don't know if you are familiar with her, but she's a really great sheep milk cheesemaker in Wisconsin. And they bought their breeding stock from her, and they really set out on the right path to do a good job, and they have been doing a really good job.
That's incredible.
Yeah, yeah. It's just this one family, and they're milking about 60 to 70 ewes, and it's seasonal like us. They milk from late February through September, basically.
Wow.
Leslie, I had a couple of questions I wanted to ask you. One is going to reveal, shall we say, my vintage. When I first got into the cheese business here in New York City, one of the sort of new American cheeses that made the rounds, and we're talking sometime in the mid-80s, was a goat's milk blue cheese from Dietrich's Farm in Western Illinois.
Oh, yes, yeah.
I was wondering if that's still on the map.
No, they're not.
Go ahead.
I had been told about them when we started doing this. A fellow farmer who's actually a vegetable farmer up in Northern Illinois had said, oh, this guy had made the most amazing goat milk blue, but he was no longer in business by the time we got set up. And I haven't really been able to track him down to find out, you know, what his story was and what happened.
Mm. And so you, the other thing I was curious about is I hear you do dinners and other events on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work?
Well, they're seasonal. And we have a very talented chef who was trained at the Culinary Institute of America. She actually was a chef here in town at a restaurant and then decided to leave that world, and we scooped her up, and she was helping us make cheese for a number of years. And then we decided we had this space that we were going to put in as a market, on farm market, and we decided not to do that, and we decided to put in a kitchen, a commercial kitchen. So we built a commercial kitchen and started offering these dinners that are basically all local food, most of it grown in here in Central Illinois. We feature farmers in addition to what we grow, so we often have them as our guests, and they come and talk to the guests about how they grow their food. It's typically a 5-course meal, and it's a very slow food kind of event in that it's literally slow. It takes about 4 hours to eat the entire meal.
And, which is as it should be.
Yeah, exactly, because it's a lot of food. And we cook based on what's available and at the height of its peak freshness and flavor of that season. Each dinner has a theme. We have between 40 and 50 guests, and we have had several guest chefs as well as our in-house chef do the dinners, and they basically run from the end of May through the end of October, typically, and we now actually have a dining inside our barn. We finished out a part of the barn to have indoor dining for when the weather is bad. So we've actually been able to extend the season into December with having that new space. But the basic idea is to be able to eat outside and walk around between courses and things like that.
I feel like, you know, I could see a Joy of Cheese on the road. We could take Martin does a series of cheese tastings. You could head down to Champaign Urbana.
Yes, you have a standing invitation.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, that's fantastic. And so I guess, you know, something that I ask on every show just to kind of, you know, test the waters a little bit, is about, you know, raw milk in your state and, you know, raw milk and raw milk cheeses and what's your relationship like with your inspectors with regards to all that?
So far, so good is what I would say. We knew early on that we needed to establish a good relationship with our Department of Public Health. That's who inspects us. And we've been able to gain their trust in that we run a really clean facility, and they seem to have a lot of confidence in our ability to produce safe product. We've been tested in terms of, there was initially some questions about our ability to make certain types of cheese with raw milk, but I was able to hold our ground by telling them that, in fact, the FDA allows you to make these types of cheeses as long as they're aged more than 60 days. So we have a good relationship. We haven't necessarily been threatened beyond, you know, what we're able to do, and just it's always one of those situations where when you see things happening in other states, you begin to get concerned that there might be some intrusion, but so far so good.
That's great. Well, that's really, really positive, and hopefully, you know, you guys will inspire countless other cheesemakers in your area. Do you currently offer any kind of like internships or internship possibilities, or if people want to come in and learn from you guys, or are you just kind of, you know, trying to maintain, you know, the craft that you guys do right now and not really deal so much with interns?
Yeah, we've had interns in the past, and this year we're focusing more on we've just hired two new people for helping to make cheese, and our focus is shifting away from year-to-year kind of training opportunities to more longer-term investment in our employees. So that's the direction that we're heading with right now.
That's fantastic. Well, I think, you know, there's so much talk about job creation now all over the place. And I just think that, you know, I hear more and more stories like yours that are really kind of creating, you know, local economies from the ground up. And it's really, really inspiring and fantastic to hear about.
Yeah, we're totally about that. It's a mutually beneficial situation to do it that way, I think.
Absolutely. Well, we actually are almost out of time for the day, but I did want to ask Martin, I know you have a couple cheese tastings coming up, and I want to make sure our listeners can get in on it. So if you could give us the skinny.
Oh, sure. We have our monthly event at DBA is on Tuesday, and the title of the event is Crunchy, and it's all about cheeses with those amino acid crystals, hard cheeses that are going to be lots and lots of fun, and they pair, and because of their concise flavors and slightly salty finish, they pair very well with a wide variety of beers. And so that'll be February 1st at 7:30 at DBA Brooklyn, which is in Williamsburg, and then on the 8th, we're doing one, and my music journalism roots, I think, kind of show with the title of this one. It's called Red, Red Wine, and it's all about taking these same sorts of hard cheeses with crystallized hard cheeses and pairing them with a variety of red wines, and that'll be taking place at the Clerkenwell over on Clinton Street. So those are the two big events we have coming up. All the events are at one of my two blogs, thejoyoftrees.blogspot.com. There's another Joy of Trees blog called thejoyoftrees.wordpress, and that has a feature called Fromage of the Day, where I take a cheese, a handcrafted cheese, and pair it and describe it in a sentence, discuss its optimal pairing companions in a sentence in terms of beers, wines, in some cases, other beverages. And then the thing that I think makes it so popular is, then I'll take my music journalism knowledge into effect and compare it to a piece of music. And thanks to the wide variety of music that's available on YouTube, I almost always include a link. So the fromage of the day always is a picture of the cheese, a description of the cheese, what I think you should drink with the cheese, and gee, if it were a Joni Mitchell song, it would be this. And if possible, include maybe not even just a link to an audio clip of it, but a link to maybe a not too common live video clip of Joni doing the song, or of an alternate take of Steely Dan song, or you know, or of Derek and the Dominoes live, or some such or another.
That is very cool. I always say cheese. I really do feel like all roads lead to cheese. You know.
Yeah, they sure do.
Well, my big contention, and I think this is probably why I got drawn into it, is that I think cheese and music are two of the greatest pleasures that are poorly served by language, and so this is an attempt to kind of elevate the language of each.
Wow. And so, Leslie, if people want to learn more about Prairie Fruits and what you guys do, do you have a website as well where people can reference you guys?
Yes, absolutely. It's just www.prairiefruits.com.
Prairiefruits.com. Well, yes. I certainly enjoyed my time on the website, so I hope our listeners will check it out too. Well, that seems like it's it. Unfortunately, we are out of time today, but I hope you both will join me again on some future episode of Cutting the Curd.
I'd be happy to.
Yeah, I would too.
And thank you both very much. We'll see you guys next Sunday at the same time on Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd.